Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. Thank you for joining us today. This is a very relevant topic we're covering today. It's there's so much misinformation about this and so much wrong perspective, I guess is the best way to put it, when we consider dogs and this whole mythology out there that they're just really little more than pack animals like their ancient ancestors, the wolf. Today's episode is actually inspired by an email from a listener, so thank you for that. Keep these emails coming, because honestly, I had another topic in mind, and I read this email, and I'm like, God, this is a better topic. So here we are. I'm going to read the email first, and we'll dive right into this and really get to the nitty-gritty. Now, I'm going to preface with, behavior is not my strong suit. I'm one of those doctors, though, that I don't try to pretend that I know everything. I don't ever try to sort of nuance my way around making it seem as if I know more about something than I do. Behavior is one of those things. And so during those circumstances, you know, we all have our strong suits and our weaker suits as human beings. And certainly that applies to our professions as well. And no one can know everything. You have special interests. I love orthopedic surgery. Somebody who loves orthopedic surgery is not necessarily someone who's going to be really heavily into behavior, right? So we all have our strong suits. So what I do is I find help. I have a wonderful local trainer that follows all of the most modern tenets of behavior. And I also go on the Veterinary Information Network and get advice from behavioral specialists, meaning veterinarians that actually got later board certifications postdoctoral in animal behavior. So I get help. And so through getting that help, I've gained a lot of insight. And this email is really sums up a lot of what's wrong out there, even among professional trainers. So let's get right into it. Dear Dr. Roger, I have a French bulldog, Rosie, in need of training. With the new addition of another Frenchie puppy in the home, she has become unusually aggressive about her toys, her food, and when laying on the couch. This never before happened. The aggression started with just the puppy, but has now extended to members of the house when they approach these items or come near her space on the couch. Aside from toys and the couch, she is perfectly fine, playful, loving, and completely normal. Is this simply because the new member of the home is causing her to assert her dominance as leader of the pack? If so, why the new aggression towards members of the house? I'm getting conflicting opinions from different trainers, and I want to select the approach that is best for my dog. I hope this makes it on the air. I love your show. It is so fun and informative. Respectfully, Dana from Sarasota, Florida. All right, a fellow Floridian from the opposite coast. Thank you for this email, because again, it's so relevant and important, because dogs, folks, are not pack animals. And you know, not to jump right to the suspenseful question here: are dogs pack animals? No, they're not. We're gonna dive into some of the misconceptions here and really what the reality is. So essentially, the past thinking has been that, okay, dogs, because they descended from the wolf, are pack animals. Very famously, Cesar Millan, who has made a lot of money and gotten a lot of notoriety and has a show and all that, is one of those people that subscribes to this notion that dogs are little more than pack animals. And in order to properly train them, one has to assert himself or herself as the head of the pack. And that has to be done through dominant submission. And really, it's really not the case. So dominance theory, it's been debunked quite a long time ago. I mean, there's studies that date back to the 40s where captured wolves were put in a situation, an environment where they were forced to compete for resources. And the result was definitely dominance-seeking behavior like wolf packs will do in the wild. And you had your alpha, your beta, all the way down to your, I believe it's the omega is the one that is the lowest on the totem pole there. And yeah, that's an absolutely true thing. Wolves are pack animals. They collaborate in hunting. They collaborate in society. There's ones that are more sort of the protectors. There's the more dominant wolves tend to be towards the front and channeling the prey, whereas the weaker ones in the pack are sort of support and ancillary. It's fascinating, but let's not forget that dogs are thousands of years evolved from wolves. The first evidence of cohabitation of canids with people dates back to like 150,000 years ago. It's insane, right? And so those more docile wolves that first entered the lives of humans and realized that they could actually have a symbiotic relationship and work together and actually even over time gain affection for one another, that's selective breeding that those early docile wolves that made their way into the human habitation, that it evolved and evolved and evolved, and essentially we made them a lot more like us, not from just a behavioral perspective, but from a dietary perspective. So when you look at other studies where dogs have been put together to compete for resources, they act very, very differently. You even see this with wild or feral dogs. When they hunt, they don't collaborate like wolves. They actually scatter and scavenge or hunt for small game on their own. They're not forming this sort of collaboration like wolves, and so they don't need, nor do they have, that same social hierarchy. We will see that there are more assertive dogs versus less assertive dogs, and I think that's what we're seeing here in the case of Rosie. And by the way, Dana, this entire episode is an answer to your email, so don't think I'm ignoring you, because it's very important to how you're going to approach Rosie, and I'll get to Rosie specifically in just a little bit. But dogs are uniquely social. They're able to bond with and learn from one another, but what makes them remarkable is they learn from other species, where you don't see that same type of thing with wolves. Wolves, yes, under certain circumstances, like in circuses or, extraordinary situations where, yeah, people have been able to tame wild animals, whether it's lions, wolves, or what have you. Yeah, aside from that, but on a regular basis, you do not see this cross-species cooperation with wild animals, including wolves. And so when you look at a dog, they can even develop a relationship with a cat or even a bird. Great example. My dog, one of my dogs, is a Labrador Retriever. He's a duck dog. He's meant to be obsessed with ducks. One of the main uses of Labrador Retrievers is for duck hunting. Well, I have pet ducks, and my pet ducks are Rouen breed ducks, and so they basically look like giant mallards. Mallards are wild ducks, and like if you looked at these ducks, you would just think, wow, those are awfully large mallards, because they have the same coloration. The boys have the green heads and the yellow beaks, and the females have, I say boys, the males, the females have more of the gray coloration with a little bit of color in their plumes. But essentially, my dog Nacho, he sees, especially like right now, I live on a lake and it's mating season, and so there's ducks galore in my backyard because they're waterfowl. And he sees a bunch of ducks congregating. Man, he's ready to rip my arm off trying to get at those ducks, right? If I let him go, I bet you he'd get one. Whereas when he's around my Rouen ducks, he could not care less. He's learned that there's something special about those ducks. There's something different about them. He sees that I interact with them. He sees that my girlfriend and my kids interact with them, that they come in a coop every night and we feed them. Like, they've picked up on that. And so that's where this whole pack mentality thing, it's just wrong. So when back to Rosie, what she's doing is called resource guarding. So her resources are the couch, the toys, and the food. And that's not uncommon. Now, the reason she's never done it before is because she's never had to compete for resources. But is she trying to dominate? No, she's guarding her resources. So the most important thing you need to do is take away the resources. So I would eliminate all toys from the house, at least for an extended period of time. I would actually allow no one on the couch. Not the puppy, not Rosie. It's time to eliminate the couch. And I would feed them in separate rooms. And that way there's no potential for resource guarding when it comes to the food. Now, down the road, when they have established a relationship and Rosie's not feeling this need to protect her resources, down the road, I'm now talking 6, 12 months or maybe even longer, maybe it's okay to have some of these things around, but maybe the resources say goodbye forever, and that's okay. Try to maybe down the road introduce dog beds. Whatever it is, the resources need to go away, and I bet that alone will cause a big difference. But as far as you selecting a trainer that is of the pack mentality where Rosie needs to be dominated, oh no. That's that run for the hills if any trainer brings up pack. If they say the word pack, they are living in another century. Okay, it's been proven time and again that dogs are not pack animals. They are so much more nuanced than that. They are so much more complex than that. They're somewhere between a wolf and a person, and probably more like people than they are like wolves at this point in time in their evolution. And so when we see one dog that might be more assertive and one that might be more submissive, that's just a personality trait. It's not that one is dominating the other. Some dogs are more laid back, some are more hyped up, and there's everything in between. Just like people. There's people that will naturally assert themselves to be leaders right out of the gate, and there's others that are more inclined to follow them or be subordinate to them, but it's not a dominance thing, it's just a personality trait. So let's consider it more that. One of the things I love this one statement that I got from an animal behaviorist in one of my recent consultations was, listen, we need to teach them, not train them, right? Dogs are intelligent animals that learn through instruction rather than a hierarchical loyalty, right? And so when we try to dominate them, we can actually, yes, achieve a result, but at the end of the day, we can actually create emotional shutting down. And that can lead to other problems that can also reduce quality of life. You don't want your dog to emotionally shut down. You want them to be part of your life. And so there's very unique ways to do that. One of the things I've also learned a great deal about is, back in the days of prior, because I say prior because the science of dog behavior is always evolving as well, but what we've learned so much is that back in the day, it was, and there are still some trainers subscribing to this, and I don't like it, but it was correct, redirect, and then reward when you get the desired behavior. The correct part is bad. We don't want to exert a negative influence on the dog, like yell no, or what I really hate is snap him with a prong collar. These are very bad techniques, and yes, the there is a tendency to want to go there because it's a quicker result, and you're going to achieve that result faster because the dog doesn't want that negative influence. They're scared of it. So you're basically teaching them to avert the behavior out of fear. We're instilling fear in them, and again, that leads to emotionally shutting down. It can lead to neuroses. It could lead to other types of anxieties. It could enhance or amplify other anxieties that may not otherwise be there. It can make them behave differently when they're at the veterinarian or at the groomer. It can make them behave differently when you want to take them to doggy daycare. At the end of the day, you might get that one behavior that you're trying to fix fixed, but you're causing all kinds of other emotional problems for the dog. And that's not what we want to do. So what we want to do instead is redirect and reward. We redirect away from the unwanted behavior, then we reward the wanted behavior. And in addition to this, we need to do all kinds of things and have all kinds of modalities to occupy the minds of these dogs and help them to work more cognitively. My own dog has had, past tense, anxieties towards certain men. Men that are tall with blonde curly hair, and that included my son. You know, the teenagers these days all have these mop tops. That's been in for the last year, and my son's got this giant head of hair. He got curly hair from his mom. And, you know, Nacho, when we adopted him, came in with this intrinsic fear of certain men, and my 15-year-old son was one of them. And I brought in my favorite trainer. Her name is Mandy Barrett. She's local here in Rockledge, Florida. So any local listeners need a trainer. Mandy Barrett's fantastic. The name of her her company or whatever she calls her training service escapes me, but Mandy Barrett, B-A-R-R-A-T. Phenomenal trainer. And she came in, and in addition to averting the behavior in ways that were not correction, but just straight up reward, we have made huge headway with Nacho, to the extent that in the past I'm seeing men that he would have normally, you know, did a quick bark and kind of, you know, stepped away from, never aggressive, but just very fearful, to now, like, he'll come up and he's wagging his tail and he's just feeling, he's feeling better. And you know, it's still a little bit of a work in progress, but rather than have this like really anxious response to certain men, he might be a little standoffish at first, but then he works his way towards getting near the person. And through techniques I learned through Mandy, I actually train the people on how to deal with Nacho during these circumstances where he may be a little standoffish. I entertain a lot. I'm a very social human. I have people over all the time, and I wanted my dog to not be traumatized by it. And I won't go through all the techniques and all the things that we did, but Mandy was absolutely brilliant. I also consulted with some behaviorists, and you know, had I tried to approach this with a correction, it would have made him apprehensive every time a certain male was around that was of the type that I know he may not be thrilled with. I might have worsened the behavior, number one. Number two, I might have fixed the behavior where he's not reacting, but he's not going to come near anybody. There's so many negative things that could have happened had I not done it the right way. The other thing that was cool about Mandy is that she came in and, you know, she said, hey, look, I often work with veterinarians where, hey, listen, we've reached sort of this plateau where we're not getting quite the goals we want to get without, you know, pharmaceutical help. And I'd like to at least temporarily, you know, pick your brain about, okay, we've gotten this far. Would potentially a course of Paxil or Prozac be helpful? Her goal is always to wean the dog off it at some point. For her, it's like 3 to 6 months. Once the desired behavior is there, we try to wean them off and see if we maintain it. Nacho is on Prozac, and that's been part of what's helped him. I think it's been multifactorial. And that's really the kind of trainer you want to consider, where you have A, discarded entirely 100% this whole notion of the pack. Dogs are not pack animals. Number two, redirect reward. And then three, bring in cognitive techniques that are going to help the dog cognitively reach their goals. So in Nacho's case, we realized he's very, very hyper in tune with his environment. So we did this thing called relax on the mat. It's basically a rolled up bathroom mat, and we just kind of put it down, and we bring him over and we drop a treat and we have him lay down, and everyone, you know, the person that's doing it is really calm, and then we have him step away from the mat and then come back, hey, come over here. Labradors are so food driven, that makes them so much easier to train. Come over, then he lays on the mat and you drop it down, right? And we do that for like 15 minutes, you know. I haven't done it lately because I haven't needed to. Well, then we take the mat away, and then we know somebody's going to come over. We drop the mat, and that becomes his safe place. Now, somebody comes over, he's not as anxious, he's not as triggered by the door. If it's a man that comes in, He relaxes on the mat and he comes over to greet when he's good and ready to do it. We have these other things called lick mats. So I'll give him his own room. There are these mats that the rubber mats, and they got little shapes, little depressions in them, and you smear canned dog food in them and you put them in the freezer. And he's, you know, it takes a while for them to kind of lick the shapes and work at the shapes, and it occupies their mind and gives them a reward while they're figuring out how I, you know, most successfully get the goodies within the mat. And then there's these Kong shaped plastic containers that you can unscrew them and open up and fill with kibble. And there's just one little hole on one side, on the oblong side of it. You know, so think of like an egg and like the tip of the egg, where there's this little hole and it just accommodates one or two kibbles. And he's got to roll it around with his nose just right to get that kibble out. And as they're working on it, they're exercising their mind. They're figuring out, well, what's the best way to tip this thing up so it's going to drop the kibble. They're using their nose or even pressing it up against the wall. And it, I mean, he could be at this thing for 30 to 45 minutes. And I'm not overfeeding him because it's just like a, you know, small handful of kibble. It's what he would normally eat anyway. And so I just feed him a little bit less dinner. And so it's like things like that where, no, I'm not dominating this dog. I am making him use his mind. I'm helping him to occupy his mind to increase the breadth of his cognition, so that he's more mindful and more thoughtful. And at the same time, we are redirecting and rewarding. So please reject the pack animal theory. It's been disproven. You know, it's frustrating. Even some veterinarians talk about this whole pack thing. It's just very, 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 very frustrating. So the best thing I can have all of you take away is that, you know, dogs, at the end of the day, they're our friends and they're our companions because they choose to be loyal, not because we dominate them. The research has shown conclusively that they're not remotely pack animals. They don't recognize hierarchy in the way that has previously been taught by misguided trainers. And I'm sorry, Mr. Cesar Millan, you're wrong. You are so absolutely wrong. And it's troubling that that message continues to get out there because he's so popular. Think about this. Is there ever a reason to subject your friend to dominant or punitive behavior? Do you do that? Would that person remain your friend? So think about that. At the end of the day, your dog is your friend. Yes, you're responsible for that dog. Yes, it's your responsibility to be his leader, but it is not your responsibility to dominate your dog. That's all I have for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Dana, for your email. I hope that this episode was helpful and you gained some insight from it. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in.